Yeah. Anyhow, so I do this piano business a little bit, and occasionally I ski, not very often. Some years, I hardly ever have skied for a whole week in a row, but last year I was able to squeak out a week and do that. I dive, scuba dive. Oh. Yeah, I've been certified for that for a long time. You know, some people say when I say I'm certified, they assume that it's insane. Certified to dive, but diving, that's a great world. And I've always snorkeled, and many years ago I got certified to dive. And so I've done that. I've dived in most of the interesting places. I've dived the Barrier Reef, and I've dived, you know, all kinds of places around the world. But that stuff is fairly time-consuming. But and recently, time has been fairly tight. Usually, my wife and I have tried to take some sort of a tropical vacation of some kind where I would, let's say, dive for a few days, and then most of the time she and I would snorkel together and things of that sort. So, I like that. I do that kind of stuff. But I don't do a huge amount else. I do things around the house. Obviously, I garden, and I happen to be the cook of the family. Mm-hmm. I'm a very good fast order cook, and she's heavily busy, and she does other things, and so we sort of divided it up.
Well, you're a chemist, you're probably pretty good at.
Yeah, I mean, I like to cook. I enjoy it, and I have has the great virtue that I can decide what we're going to eat. And as far as she's concerned, if I'm willing to make it, she's willing to eat it. So it all works out well. And she has plenty of other things she handles in the place. So I think it's a pretty good division of labor. So I kept cooking is sort of fun, and I do that pretty much every meal. I would say they're very. I can't remember the last time she made a meal from scratch, let's say. Every once in a while she does just to prove she can do it. But mostly it's me. And some things around the house. But, you know, not a lot. I do some exercise just so I won't fall apart, you know, obviously. But this is my hobby here, you know.
Okay. Yeah. that's good.
Yeah.
You've been given a great many awards and honors, but the
Not
what I really want to ask you about is what are your greatest rewards? That is, what's given you the most satisfaction?
It's very hard to say. One of the things that certainly gave me great satisfaction was the National Medal of Science, because that's a really good thing. And the nice thing about it, it happened when my father was still alive. And they called me up in the morning, in fact, about 6:30 in the morning, to tell me that I'd won the National Medal of Science. And then they said, well, and you can... You can bring three guests to the ceremony at the White House. And so I said to them, I had had some time to think about this by then, I said to them, well, that's fine, but it's a little bit of a problem. I said, because obviously I'm going to bring my wife and two daughters to the thing, and it's too bad I can't bring my father, who's a wounded war veteran. And they just laughed, and they said, okay, you get four. And so, I mean, they knew what I was doing, and of course that was exactly right.
Yes.
But anyhow, so I got him down there, and I brought him down there, and so he was at the ceremony.
Wonderful.
Where Bush gave me the medal, and that was pretty nice. That was really nice, because it wasn't many years later that he died. And so that was nice. I think that was pretty gratifying, just for that sort of thing.
I'm not so concerned about the awards. I mean, what satisfies you about your work?
Several things, obviously. I mean, it's nice to see the extent to which we open up things that other people then develop. That part is good. I mean, I've done a certain amount of hit and run of that. We did a thing, and then we don't follow it up, and then other people pick it up and run. Well, that's fine. I think it's terrific. I'm happy with that. I mean, we're doing a lot of organic electrochemistry at one point. We sort of opened up the connection between cations, radicals, and anions by doing the electrochemical interconnection. And that has turned out to be a very good way to do things. And several other people have picked it up and have, you know, done things with it. So that part is good. It's nice to see that stuff. A lot of them, frankly, the cyclodextrin derivatives as enzymes, you know, some of that has been picked up by a lot of people, too, you know, various things. So that part is nice. I get a lot of satisfaction out of seeing what has happened with former students. I mean, it really is true. And you tend to think of these people to some extent as your children. It's totally outrageous because they're obviously doing it on their own. But still, it's very gratifying to see how well Larry Overman has turned out, for instance. I played a major role for Larry. Larry was a postdoc with me, and he was all set to go into the pharmaceutical industry. And I thought this was a big mistake, and I really urged him and got him eventually to go to Irvine, where he started. And he has now turned out to be one of the really great synthetic organic chemists in the country. You know, and so he branched off. And it's part of what I like is to see the extent to which people have come through my place. Some of it's fun to see that they then carry on with what we do, but some of it's fun to see how they branch off into other areas. Bob Bergman was a postdoc of mine, and that you wouldn't even notice that by looking at what Bob does now. But Bob came into my lab, did some very, very nice things. He always speaks well about how important it was that his time here. And what he has done is just terrific, you know. Bob Grubbs was my graduate student. Bob Grubbs is really a great fellow and has done wonderful things, absolutely wonderful things. And John Groves at Princeton, you know. I mean, it's just a positive of these people who have done well. And I don't want to... I probably have missed some important ones that I haven't even just happened not to remember.
The nice thing is we can add them in later if you want to do that.
Yes, I probably have missed some of these people. But anyhow, so these people, it's really gratifying to see it because you know, I have a feeling that they may or may not have come out with a specific technology that they now use. Probably not. I mean, many of them going into other fields. But I think some of what they do must have been influenced by the way we operate here. And so that's, you know, it feels good. They claim it is true. And, you know, I think that... I think it is possible to get a fair amount of good research. You may not be able to get the best. You may get a fair amount of good research without banging on people too hard. I don't think you have to do that. I tend not to do that, frankly. And
how often do you see it? How do you see them?
How do I see them? Well, every week we have a research group seminar where one of the students talks about what he's done since he or she has done since the last time they presented, and then the second half of it is students talking about something from the literature they find interesting, and that, you see, I think is an important part. In other words, I think it's important to give these characters an education or have them get an education, not just do research. Mm-hmm. And so we have a number of things that we do here that are related to that. They know they have to do research proposals, all kinds of things, you know, that help them to think about sort of things they would do. And so, if we're mentioning people, Alana Shepard's my student, the first woman in the faculty in the chemistry department at Yale, and certainly the first, you know, she shot up to a full professor like Zip, and is certainly one of the stars of that department now. And so Alana is an excellent example of somebody who has done extremely well. Jean Shimolevsky, who's at Purdue, is really a superstar there, and she was a graduate student with me. And there's a whole pile of people in the Middle West. I mean, Sam Gelman, really great at Wisconsin. Steve Zimmerman, really great at Illinois. In Canada, Jick Chin. Those other people were all graduate students, postdocs, and a lot of very good postdocs and very, very good jobs, including in Germany. The chief... organic chemist at Cologne, the guy who's sort of the head of the organic division, is a guy who was a postdoc with me. Went back to Germany as a bio-organic chemist, a field that almost didn't exist in Germany, and therefore he got all kinds of awards and shot up to this spot. You know, so you can see things like that, and it's very gratifying. So I don't know whether you see. Obviously, you get gratification out of the research too. I mean, it's sort of nice to see things you've done that really have made an impact. You know, that mm-hmm. people. Care about it, and certainly if this cancer thing works out, it's going to be hard to not be excited about that.
Sure.
But the business with the people is nice too, frankly. I mean, the business of turning out students who've done so well. You know, and I just mentioned the academic ones, but a lot of the industrial guys are doing extremely well. I mean, mm-hmm. I've got guys very high in Merck, for instance, and things of that sort, you know, and it's really gratifying to see it. Because fundamentally, I think that I can see the way in which what went on here was helpful to them, and that's really mm-hmm. so. At least maybe we fool ourselves about this. So I say, you know, we think of these as our scientific children. To some extent, we're kidding ourselves. Obviously, they have many other influences, you know. But still, that part.
I don't think that's true. I think they really are.
Yeah, some of it makes a difference. Yeah. So that part is very good, I think. And I don't know. It's also I frankly also feel good about some other. Things which are more personal. I mean, my two daughters, this I think my wife and I can share credit for. My two daughters always considered that they had to have a serious career. They really saw this as a thing they really wanted to do. They both became attorneys. Actually, one of them started off thinking of going into science, but in fact eventually became an attorney. They both became attorneys, but they're extremely successful. I mean, these kids are still in their 30s, and one of them is a partner in one of the major New York law firms and is a superstar there. I mean, she's written, she lectures before the Bar Association. She writes chapters on things because she's become a specialist in important areas, and she's the head attorney on deals worth more than $1 billion, things of that sort. So she's done extremely well. And then my other daughter is going out to Los Angeles. She was originally in the... she's a litigator. She was originally in the entertainment litigation business and had clients like Clint Eastwood, you know, seriously good clients. But she decided she didn't want to do that kind of practice because you couldn't control your life. I mean, you could end up in in Saskatoon for 6 months pursuing some trial or whatever. He had no idea what was going to happen. So she went in so-called in-house with Sony Pictures and in the litigation department. And she's now vice president. I mean, the kids are like 36 years old. She's vice president litigation there. I mean, the kids are really great. But it's sort of gratifying to see how well they have done. And some of it obviously has to do with the idea that one does take one's career seriously and do something with it, you know. You don't just sort of float through. So that's pretty gratifying. And I feel good about my wife's career, frankly. I mean, some of what I have done is related to keeping her career going well. I mean, some of the offers I've had from outside have been interesting, but I've turned them down in part because I didn't want to disrupt her career, because why should one do that? You know, it wasn't that important to do it. And so she's now a full professor of biochemistry at Cornell Medical College. She was at one point acting chairman of the department. She's really a good scientist. And so that's gratifying to see that I was able to do whatever I did without having to make a human sacrifice out of my wife. That's nice, mm-hmm. too, frankly. You know. Yeah.
The future of organic chemistry. But before we do that, since we started with physical organic chemistry, I wanted to say, where is physical organic chemistry today?
I have a problem. About 5 minutes from now, Margaret, can you check downstairs and see whether they're really going to
do as much as we can?
Okay. All right. Future of physical organic chemistry. There are obviously two directions that it has to go, and I think both are important. One is to increasingly complex systems. That's obviously the whole physical organic chemistry of proteins, of nucleic acids, of big things, of aggregates, of polymers. I mean, there's a whole area there of complexity. You know, organic chemistry in general has been a reductionist science, where we try to take complicated things and reduce them to something simple so we can study. And I think we now have to expand in the other direction and worry about interactions and weak interactions and all this kind of stuff. So that's fairly obvious. I think people do that. But I think people are underestimating what's still left to be done in the simplest example. We cannot make a believable movie showing hydroxide reacting with methyl chloride, in which you actually show the various directions in which the thing comes in, you show the speed at which it occurs, you show the energy at all points of the thing, and the geometry, you know, that the whole geometric thing, because you have a lot of different angles at which you can attack with different probabilities and all that. That one is almost simple enough that you can believe the calculations, but you can get much beyond that, and the theory simply isn't good enough to believe in. And I think there is a very important part of physical organic chemistry left to go, in which a big piece of it will be theoretical, and a big piece of it will be making sure the theory is right. And that's the kind of thing that we've talked about earlier, you know, what we're trying to do here. I mean, I think it's still important to get to the place where you can say simply not just, well, I know it attacks from the back, but not from the front. But I mean something more than that, you know. I mean, that's not a description of a reaction. And you can do this on a computer. You just have no reason to believe that it's correct. And so I think there's going to be a cooperation between theoretical chemistry and experimental chemistry to produce sensible checks of the theory. And that's to some extent what we've been doing with this hydrophobic business, is trying to get a picture of what the transition state seems to look like as judged from this exposed surface stuff, and whether that can be consistent with the theoretical predictions, you know. So I think that's an important section. And then there are probably other things, too, that I have missed. I mean, there certainly is a lot of physical chemistry of excited states that's still left to be done by physical organic chemists. And there's a lot of physical organic chemistry of unstable species. There's probably a lot of physical organic chemistry to be done at 4 degrees Kelvin, which is very different from what we do at room temperature. You know, there's a lot. I think the problem with the future business is you can't make it restrictive, because there are people with good ideas that happen not to be my ideas, you know, and so there's a lot of stuff that's going to go on that will be, I think, quite interesting. Physical organic chemistry, to the extent that we now start dealing with metals seriously, which is what Bob Bergman has been doing now for years, I mean, that's a place. We can't be stuck with carbon. I mean, we've got to start understanding what happens if you're dealing with an iridium atom somewhere in there, and how does that change anything, you know. So that, mm-hmm. that whole physical metallo-organic field. It's not entirely physical inorganic, because it's often organometallic, but that whole area is very important, and it has all kinds of rules of its own, and still plenty of stuff to be done there. So that, I think it's a real, real growth area. The problem with it is that there's not enough of a clientele for it. There's a big clientele for the bio stuff because of the NIH, and they're the white guys with the money. And so people get somewhat discouraged that, you know, if you do other more fundamental physical organic, then it has nothing to do with bio anything. then sometimes they think it's hard to get money, and then the students don't want to work with it because why work in a field where you won't get a job when you finish? You know, there's all that kind of stuff. Physical organic chemistry has a big thing to do with the environment, for instance. You know, there are a lot of areas where we can make a contribution. But anyway, I think it seems to me that we have to, there's still plenty to do in our core area. And then in addition to that, we of course have to outreach both into large molecules and also away from this preoccupation with carbon chemistry only, you know.
Okay. Organic chemistry in general, what I see is just huge numbers of synthetic organic chemists out there building bigger and bigger molecules.
Some of it you have to wonder about. I would say synthetic methodology still has a lot to go. I mean, there's one area of what we worry about which has to do with synthetic methodology. Mostly we don't. But the one which I'm concerned about is that when you want to do a selective organic reaction, you send in a reagent that hits the most reactive part of the molecule.
Right.
And if that's not what you want, you have to block that in some way or activate somewhere else. And nature doesn't do anything like that. I mean, all of natural chemistry is done by binding a substrate and using the geometric control of the catalyst-substrate complex in order to direct the chemistry. So you can chew off methyl groups and leave double bonds alone oxidatively. I mean, all kinds of wild stuff that we don't know how to do. And yet you know it can be done because nature's doing it. And so we've been pushing that for a long time. And that's our biggest area, which is really synthetic methodology. And there I've had people working with me, postdocs, Barry Snyder, let's say, who's a well-known synthetic organic chemist, who was a Corey, a graduate student, and came and worked in that stuff, and we invented a synthesis of cortisone using this kind of geometric control to carry out functionalization of a ring that otherwise was dead, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very interested in that, and we're still pushing that. I still have a couple of people working in that area here now, trying to develop catalysts that will do these selective things. And so imposing that area. Now, a lot of people are now doing things related to that. I mean, some of Sharpless epoxidation, some of Jacobson stuff, some of Corey's stuff have to do with catalysts that complex in some way with the substrate and direct chemistry as a result. Often, they're interested in stereochemistry. But regiochemistry is the one we've been more interested in because of this bizarre idea that the nature can chew off a methyl group and leave a double bond alone, that we have no clue how to do that. So that's the kind of thing we're interested in doing, and I think that's a place that organic chemistry will continue to develop, is that kind of stuff of imposing catalytic geometric control on things. Then there are big areas, you know, that organic chemists are finally doing. I mean, right now you can look around and see people are suddenly taking carbohydrate chemistry seriously. For a long time it was considered a separate field. The division of carbohydrate chemistry was not part of organic chemistry. Bizarre.
Yes.
And some of the really brilliant advances in carbohydrate chemistry were even not known. I mean, Ray Lemieux started doing conformational analysis in carbohydrates long before organic chemists figured out what was going on there. You know, I mean, these people did some things they had within their own community of carbohydrate chemists, stuff that organic chemists were not noticing for a while. But now it has changed, and a lot of the synthetic people are doing carbohydrates increasingly. You know, obviously, Sam Danishevsky is doing carbohydrates, but Dan Kahn is doing carbohydrates now. Bill Rausch is doing carbohydrates, you know, and then of course you've got other classes of molecules that people are now willing to do that they haven't done before. I mean, polymer chemistry is an area that I think is going to have to be increasingly not some separate field done only by polymer chemists, but a thing where people are really doing serious structural studies of detailed structure. You know, I mean, polymer chemistry, I think, is going to move, as carbohydrate chemistry has done, back into the mainstream of chemistry, and people are going to do increasingly interesting things with polymers, with well-defined structures of polymers. So I think there will always be, in chemistry, this need to make new molecules, new materials, because, as I said before, you know, we've just scratched the surface of the numbers of possible mm-hmm. molecules. Medicinal chemistry is increasingly a sophisticated field. The people in the medicinal business are really learning an awful lot about drug interactions with macromolecules and receptors. And so I think that flavor is going to get into chemistry itself. You see something already, which I think is in the right direction, The Committee on Professional Training has now finally indicated that biochemistry ought to be part of the undergraduate training, education. I shouldn't say training, education of chemists. I think it's absolutely crazy not to. I mean, absolutely crazy for people not to know what is DNA, not to know any of the simple transformations. When they learn about the aldol condensation, not to know that there's an enzyme called aldolase that does things, and how does it do it? You know, because if you know that stuff, you can invent new chemistry. And so it's crazy for people not to know that. So that kind of thing is going to be needed. But it's a big question you've asked. I don't know. I don't know what, for instance, the future of... I actually gave a lecture on this recently at the Council of Chemical Research on what the future is of all these fields. And I tried to talk about what the analytical chemists were trying to do, what the physical chemists are trying to do. I have some idea what it is. My way of doing this was very straightforward. I looked at the people who I thought were the most inventive and saw what they were trying to do and said, well, you know, that's what leads to the immediate future. But... I think there's always going to be chemistry. Some people think not. I think they're absolutely wrong. There's always going to be chemistry because we are so special, because we create new things. There's almost no other science that creates anything. We create new things. And that creation involves a creativity, an intellectual creativity in realizing what to do, you know, what to make and why to make it and what to do with it when you've got it, that is very special to our field. So I think it's a... I can't believe it's going to disappear unless it turns out it disappears because our message is so poorly sent and received that nobody thinks we're doing anything, you know.
Last question. Go ahead. Do you have any advice for aspiring young chemists or young people who are even considering it?
Sure. I mean, I gave one. I mean, there are a number of things that I talked about in the Priestley address, which are sort of interesting characterizations of the research process. I mean... one thing that they really have to understand from much of what we do in science, we ask leading questions, and you have to understand that that's what we do. You have to have an idea, and then you have to ask nature, is this right? You know, it's not just conversational. But that's, so you really have to formulate questions in such a way that they can be answered like that. There's also this natural rhythm in all of research in which you sort of start off with a great idea, and you start off with something, and then in the middle of the whole thing, it just doesn't work as you planned, and I call that Act Two of the play, and you got to hang with it, because in Act Three, with any luck, the thing is finally resolved, and the protagonist emerges triumphant, and that's when the fun is, you know. But Act Two isn't bad when you're wrestling with a problem and trying to solve it. So you should not assume that because things are going badly, they can't work out. But the other piece of advice I gave, which I think is real, is that you want to pick, when you pick a research project, it has to be something where if it's successful, you'll be proud to publish it. If it succeeds and you still have a feeling, gee, I don't know, do I want to publish it, then that's a big mistake. And it's not a bad idea to pick some sort of a general, large goal. For instance, like our goal of making small molecules that will duplicate everything you can do with an enzyme. And that's a big goal. And we're not going to succeed in doing that, obviously. But that goal in front of you, I think, gives you a stimulus, a sort of direction of where to go. I think it's a very helpful thing to have a big goal of some kind and to aim for that big goal, you know. And the other thing, of course, at the beginning, young chemists have got to establish that they know how to drive before they get in the race. And so you've got to get stuff done and published and all the rest. You've got to understand that... this is more like a hockey game than like an ice skating exhibition. You don't want to just skate up and down the ice gracefully. You got to get the puck in the net. You got to get the thing actually done. You can't get a block at the end about, well, this is pretty interesting, but maybe if I do more, it'll be even better, and you keep putting it off and beating it off and don't get stuff done, you know. The smart people of mine who have failed because of that, because they never could bring themselves to get the thing done and, you know, to push on. You got to do that. You got to do that stuff.
Is there... We've talked a lot about big science, and you do big science. Is there still a role for a chemist in some small institution?
Sure. I mean, I think
a couple of graduate students.
Sure, I think absolutely right. Or just doing it with good undergraduates. You know, a lot of small colleges, they do it with good undergraduates working in some. No, there's a role for that, and I think it's perfectly fine. You've got to pick a goal that is not preposterous, but you could certainly pick a goal that would be perfectly reasonable. I mean, the people who have been working on microwave chemistry, for instance, putting things in microwave ovens to try to see what they can do, you can do that. That can be small stuff, right. And yet you can come up with good stuff. Yeah, especially if you can get products out of the microwave that you don't get other ways, you know, then you've got something very interesting. So there are things of this kind you can do. A lot of people do chemistry focused on their local environment, you know. worrying about the things that in the agricultural area, worrying about what happens to some of the insecticides if you put them in dirt and things of that kind. These are important questions, and you can actually make a local impact and do perfectly good stuff with that, you know. So there's plenty of stuff that you can do focused on either local things or focused on what particularly appeals to you that you decide is not fashionable, maybe not heavily funded because it's not very biomedical, but still looks to you like an interesting question. You know, plenty of stuff to be done.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
I got to be somewhere else. I think now, let me check with Margaret and see whether it's really true. Let's see, this is yours.